Welcome back to No Big Deal. This week, we were lucky enough to have Todd Jenkins from Glyphic. Now, what you're going to learn in this podcast episode is how you can really think outside the box and get creative on your big deals to ensure you're doing things that your competition wouldn't even think of doing to win that customer's business and partner with them. You're also going to learn from Todd how to really effectively multi-thread to create a strong business case before you get to the economic buyer. Now, a quick bit about Todd. He was the global top biller at Stack Overflow 5 years running. He took his first leadership role at a company called Codility and took them from 9 to 20 million in ARR. And he's always landed the largest ACV deal at every company he's been at. We're in sales royalty. Cue the intro.
Let me talk you through the two most emotional, stressful months of my sales career.
It's no big deal to call a CTO and tell I want to talk.
You cannot stand on the sideline and basically wait until the dice rolls itself. It's never going to happen.
I don't know if this is going to be on the record or off the record. It's almost like playing with cards, this job. Like, it's like you get given a hand of cards and like you have to do the best with what you have.
Someone might have been watching down on me.
Me and Jack going into this, when he originally told me exactly the same, like, oh, you know, Jack, I've got this idea, you know, what about this? My first thought was, my God, I don't even care if anyone, like, listens to this, you know. If I take one key takeaway from every recording, I'll be such a better rep.
This is No Big Deal, a sales podcast.
Right, Todd, we're going to talk about how you brought together stakeholders in this deal, which is probably the most magic part of it. But what I want to hear just from the get-go is, it's a big deal. It's obviously the biggest that you want to talk about. What did it do for you, or what did it teach you, or what did you learn from it?
Yeah, I think single-handedly, it's probably one of the most complex deals that I've done in my career, but also one of the most complex organizations to understand. And I think what it did for me is it just took my education of sales to a whole new level. I think you can learn a lot in the classroom. You can learn a lot by asking your leaders, but there's something else when you're kind of in the trenches in a real live environment where, you know, your ability to close is going to produce, like, you know, exponential, you know, huge amounts of kind of like commission and achievement towards target. So like when that pressure's on, I think you learn the most. So that's kind of like, you know, why this is quite exciting to talk through.
And have you always been the type of person who's like, I am going to work this out for myself, or did this deal teach you you're going to have to work this out yourself?
Yes and no, meaning that I'm very curious as a person. So whenever I work with people, I like to kind of understand and get to know kind of what's in their mind as well. So when you're working with a group of folks, you know, I don't think just the way that I do things or, you know, my strategy will be key. You've got to collaborate with leaders, teammates. You've always got to be asking questions of other people. But ultimately, like when you're in these deals, like it's your ability to bring in external resource and also make that kind of critical kind of decisions in key moments of, you know, I've just been told by this stakeholder that, you know, there's no chance of us working with the group. Do I take that face value or do I start challenging that? You're in kind of control of your actions. But it is kind of like a collaboration. And I think that when you work in organizations like salespeople, you're asking enough of your leaders, your peers, people above you, below you, to kind of help you get through hurdles that's kind of in your way.
That seems like a good place to start then. So you said that, you know, someone in the organization said you're not going to work with us at group level. How early on in the deal was that?
It's an interesting deal, this one. So the first deal, so this is just kind of like, you know, overlay kind of the organization. There's about 300,000 employees of this company. They operate in 50 countries globally. But within a country, they'll have like three or four subsidiaries. So like I couldn't, like, you mapping out this organization takes not weeks, probably months, if not years, to truly understand it. The first deal I did was with a subsidiary in the Netherlands. And I'd already met the kind of economic buyer for the group, like a couple of months before I signed the first subsidiary. When I signed the first subsidiary, I asked them, like, hey, now you're working with us, would you be able to pass this information to all other leaders like you in the group? And also, I've met the economic buyer. Can you tell them how great we are? And he basically said to me, look, I'm doing this deal at my level, but you have zero chance of getting this through at group level. It's not the way we buy. We wouldn't buy these services at a group level. And there's probably not enough demand across the group.
So like, talk about like a pin in the balloon. What was your instant reaction when you got that from him? from someone you probably trusted and already done a deal with?
Just the first instance, I don't believe you. That's the first instance. He probably was thinking about the amount of work that I'd be asking him to do. But also, I just thought, this sounds terrible, but I actually thought that you're in charge of such a small piece of this business. The people that are in charge of the entire business have probably got a different mindset than you. So that you're blocking me at this level, meaning that like you only think about your subsidiary, you only think about... So I thought it was a very natural reaction from him, to be honest with you. But I challenged that. And I think this is where salespeople get it wrong, is they take everything at face level, and you've got to be consistently challenging, not like I'm going to challenge the way you're speaking to me right now, but in your mind, challenging the way that people give you information. Like, is that logical? Does that make sense? And I see salespeople just run with information and believe it because someone that works for the company has told them something. But how many times have you been in deals where someone's told you something and then lo and behold, you meet another stakeholder and they tell you something completely different? So it's not that they're doing it for any mischievous reason. It's because their amount of information that they have to tell you is limited to that point. So when he buys tools, I thought it was quite rational that he would be told by someone at Group, you can only buy tools for your level. We wouldn't be buying these tools globally. Otherwise, this guy would be to the CFO every week. Hey, I found something new, found something new. That's kind of how I felt when he first told me that.
Did it make you think that this person like actually didn't have any influence in the company? Because that's my first sort of reaction or feeling when I hear that, you're not going to get any interest.
Yeah, but they have information. So what you need to do in a deal is you need to realize and recognize that everyone you spend time with has got information, and you need to draw as much of that information out of them as possible. So although I knew at that point that he didn't have the ability to influence me to the next layer, he probably could have influenced me, and I didn't use him for influence at that point, but I used him for information. The information he gave me was exponentially like more important than him getting me just up to the next level, because with the information, I can jump 3 levels. So it's like a game. It's like a board game. Snakes and ladders. That's the best board game. It's like the information you give me, I'm going up a ladder. If I ask for an intro, but he has no power and that intro is going to come with his bias, it's probably a snake and I'm back to square one.
Fuck, that is so true. Have you used that analogy before?
I just made it up.
No, it's very natural.
But it works, yeah. Right? I was trying to think of a board game. That's the first one that kind of came to mind.
100%. And the other thing as well is that you, to sell these sorts of deals as a salesperson, you have to believe in a transformational mindset. You have to think, you have to be able to think big picture. Like if, for example, you think, oh, this is only a tactical point solution problem, and I'm going to solve it with a tactical point solution, then you'll just sell subsidiary deals or regional deals, or like what you just mentioned there, like this country deal. And like, they're not bad deals, but that's not how you get to that's not how you change the way an organization works. And that's not what the product is built to do. And so like when they tell you, oh, you know, this, you're never going to get this, it's not the way we buy, blah, 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 you have to think, yeah, it's not the way you do this yet. And that's the way you have to be thinking in your head, yeah, basically.
Yeah. Like every closed lost deal is like, we've not sold to them yet, right? Yeah. If that company's going to be around for a long period of time, I'm sure the chances come back, things change. Yeah.
And I've seen that enough times in my career. They're like, no, this is never going to happen. And then you're like, oh my God, they're a customer now. I didn't know that. But they told me no loads of times a few years ago. Okay, nice. So I guess the next logical question is, how did you overcome that? What did you do to go up another ladder instead of finding another snake?
So I think for this, let's go back, right, a couple of steps. So before I signed the subsidiary, I actually cold emailed like the economic buyer. I knew it was the economic buyer, had the right title. You never know until you test, but I knew it was the right title. I'd had email exchanges with other parts of the organization. And my emails at that point were, I want to sell you a group deal. So I was shutting down the subsidiary conversations or like the locality of the way they were structured, those conversations, trying to get up to group. That was my naivety when I first started. But eventually I get up to this person who a few people had told me I should be speaking to. And the reality of what he told me was that like he really liked me, like not just me, but the business we were doing, our business idea. He liked what we were all about. I think he liked my approach. I went in non-salesy just to get to know him. But he said something quite brutal. He was like, you're not interesting enough to me right now. Like we are a large organization and I cannot make us as a group just implement a worldwide solution if you're not in X amount of regions. And that became like quite interesting to me because it's very practical as well, is that the complexity of getting like a 300,000 person organization to adopt a piece of software is like nigh on impossible at times if you don't have momentum for certain leaders. We were very new at that point when we spoke to him. So I think this was like, I was with this company for a number of years, and I think I spoke to them in my first like couple of years at the company, so very early on. So the first thing I heard, first thing I did was, I've got to have a strategy of like mapping this organization, but I've got to start like toppling a few of the key regions. So I had to like go out and like, and these are the days before you could do stuff in Clay, the days of like Zoom Info and Apollo and all these great ways of getting data. This was a very manual process of having to break down the organization and hedge my bets of like where the dominoes would fall, so to say. So I had to like have a strategy for the US, the UK, France, the Netherlands, in India. I had to like map out those organizations. And then it was tough because you had like offices and subsidiaries of this business in those locations. I took the UK and there were like four different kind of like organizations in the UK to sell to. So then which one are you picking? So it became this like real strategic game of, I'm going to hear like a lot of no's on the way. I'm going to sign up certain people along the way. But every time I do it, it's got to kind of like compound into getting the attention of this person. And the way that I felt at the time was that I could take on 10 regions that are not going to yield any power. And I'm going to spend 2-3 years doing that, or however long it will take me, but I still might not get his attention. So it's like a really kind of risky game of figuring out, where do I go next? So I think this theme of this podcast might be board games. I've got no idea why, but we're on it. But have you ever played Risk? Is it Risk, that's kind of strategy board game? But genuinely, in these accounts, my advice to salespeople is that too many salespeople I've managed and led in my career have kind of like looked at it as just a deal. What's my route to a deal? But it's like, it's bigger than that. The game is bigger than that. The best AEs I've ever seen are the ones that look at those organizations and go, which part interjects with which part? So where do I need to go to next to get, you know, the overall kind of deal done? So it was kind of like that sort of like game we were playing with this business.
And Todd, on that, your tactical advice, what is the most efficient and effective way of doing that?
You've got to invest your time up front. Like everyone's looking for a shortcut. You've got to invest your time. You've got to know who you're speaking to. It feels like the most simple piece of advice, but it's a piece of advice you go to organizations, you just have to give. You look at the way that salespeople are looking at accounts. None of them are mapped to it. They don't know how the organization is coming about. You actually have pieces of software coming out now to solve this problem. So this problem is so big in enterprise businesses, you have software now trying to solve it. That tells me that many organizations have a pain here. But in essence, like the way I did it is I broke down like this entire organization per country, per organization. I layered in all the people on top, and it was just very much like, right, okay, so I've got maybe 200 names in a list here. How many conversations have I had? Who speaks to who? Who can connect me to who? Which pieces are the most valuable pieces? And it was like turning like tabs. I do a lot of stuff like in, I think Google Sheets is amazing, like turning tabs from red to orange to green, meaning I've not spoken to them. I've got an intro to I've spoken to them. And the most important people on that sheet, it was like a game over the course of 12 months of like, the organization's going to look at my ability to sell, but if this type of account, you're not going to sell in 12 months. I've got to turn this like spreadsheet from like 20% green to like 60% green. And if I do that in a year, then the second year, we've got a chance to maybe go and have those conversations. So like mapping and putting that research in, and that's not outsourcing it to an SDR, that's doing it yourself. But you've got to do this research, and it takes you hours to do it whilst you're still managing your book, selling your book, hitting your targets, right? So it's easy advice, but you've got to do it. You've got to do it well. It's all in your preparation.
When was the first time in your career that you sort of changed your time horizons to be that much longer? Or was it always like that?
Ask that question again, just so I can kind of really...
How experienced were you into your career when you recognized that success comes from extending your time horizon and being more patient and more diligent like that, instead of being more impatient and expecting that the results are going to come quicker? Was there a turning point for that, or were you always that patient?
I don't know. I think maybe like I'm very impatient in life. So let me put it that way. So I think I'm very impatient. I'm always like someone that wants kind of everything. And, you know, I think it's just kind of, there's that, yeah, drive and hunger that I just want to go. Like, let's not wait around. Let's not mess around with time. But it's like this, like, it's kind of bipolar in a way, in sense, like the way I manage accounts, I've got incredible amount of patience for selling deals and accounts. Because I just think that the one thing I know in life pretty well, I think, is just sales. It's kind of the area that I kind of, it's my career, right? So when you know the formula, I think everything in life is a bit of a formula. In enterprise selling, you can't be impatient to win those deals. You just cannot have that. So when did that happen? I was pretty young at Stack. Like, my education started pretty young. So I guess I was like 23, 24, like at the height of being impatient, I guess, learning that like the way that you sold a transactional SMB type deal was the exact opposite of selling an enterprise level deal. And I think it was just connecting with various different people. Like, when you speak to senior people, you're walking in, and it's quite daunting, I think, when new reps start these enterprise roles, because you're like a 23, 24 year old. I'm going to say that salespeople probably don't have the same level of education as like a CTO or whoever you're selling to. But then it's like really dawning when you open the office, like a multinational organization, and then you've got someone very senior, 20, 25, 30 years older than you, basically telling you like, hey, by the way, like, this is going to take you at least 18 months to kind of close this deal, or 2 years to close this deal. If you listen to that enough, it compounds. You just got to have to take that advice with you and say, like, I've got to be patient. I've got to just like, just put these hard yards in. So yeah, I think there's probably a lot of salespeople out there that are going to start the enterprise game and probably lose it by thinking that they can speed the process up or rush the process, skip steps. And you've just got to, it's like your rigor, it's your process. Just build that process in and stick rigidly to your process and trust that your process will get you there. If you're not getting there, there's a process problem. Go and figure out what the problem is with your process. But if you are getting there and you are getting through the next steps, enterprise level deals, it means you're doing something right. And then you just stick to a process, and that keeps you calm, that keeps you patient.
Nice.
I'm living that at the moment. Like, I'm not seeing the instant rewards, but I'm like, I've got to stay patient. I've got to stay patient. And I think I'm becoming more patient the older I get, but still. I'm like living in that moment where the deal is there to be done, but I'm like, no, don't grab at it. Like, just wait and grow it.
But change your dopamine. Like, the biggest thing I'll give you advice on is change what you celebrate with enterprise level deals. So you should never be celebrating a close one enterprise deal, like, because that's a result of your process. It's a result of the actions you put in place. Like, why would that be a surprise? So as I mentioned to you guys earlier, we just closed our biggest deal here at Glyphic. There's no celebration. I think I closed it, made a cup of tea and went to bed because I knew it was going to come in. I knew that we'd done the work. But what celebration is that my SDR booked a meeting yesterday with like an amazing organization we can sell to. And I'm so pumped because I've changed my dopamine to different things in the process. So my dopamine hits when we cross certain levels, got to unlock certain doors, and my dopamine goes on overdrive. Like, wow, you've just booked this stakeholder in this, or, and this is how I used to operate with this. Like, that would be a milestone to succeed. When they closed a contract at group level, which was still like to six figures, like deals we were doing at that level, they were massive deals, but I wouldn't celebrate it because basically it's the work you've put in. So you have to, and that's the way to keep to your process, is like celebrate the start of your processes versus the end. Because I think it's more random at the start of your process. Getting a CTO that's going to be key to open the deal for you, getting them to reply to a cold email or get a connect on a cold call, that's way more out of your control than what is in your control, which is the process that leads you to close one deals. Does that make sense, Jack? And if you can kind of change your whole kind of like mindset, then when you have disappointments in the areas that are not linked to your dopamine, it's much more easier to become tactical and think from 30,000 feet versus think with emotion when you're in the deal. Because when you're about to lose a deal or when the later stages are not going well, you're under more risk because actually your emotional connection to that deal is on overdrive. You've got to stay disconnected at that point in the deal.
What tactical advice have you got for salespeople who are in that situation and they've got not the pressure, but let's say the expectation from their management that they've got to move things faster, or that these are the important milestones? Because sales management are obviously an important part of the process, but often they do make salespeople feel under a bit of pressure to move things forward faster, even though when you know that might not be the right thing to do.
You're paid to basically be the quarterback. At this level, talking enterprise level deals, right? You are paid to make that decision. You are paid to look at the risk of that move or not. Your manager is just one person who's inputting that deal, probably with not great information of what's happening in the deal or the people that's involved, because you're having those conversations. So like, one thing I always learned was like, as well as you sell externally, you have to sell internally. You have to sell as well internally as you do externally. It's just fact. So that means you have to sell your leaders on the deal. You have to sell the leaders on complexity, on timelines, on when these things are going to come in. If you can't do that, then you should be like training yourself to have those internal conversations. Like if you're having friction with a manager who's pushing you and telling you to do stuff and you don't believe in that, that's because you're not communicating the deal correctly with your leader. Now, look, it's like the same thing. It's like what's outside of our control is who your manager is, how your manager shows up, what advice your manager gives you. But that's also the same with your buyers. Like you're out of control of like who your buyers are, which buyers will turn up, what your buyers are going to tell you. So like it's your ability to manage that. And I'll say to any salesperson listening is don't always take their advice, like challenge your leaders. Your healthiest relationships will be leaders that can understand that like when I hire people, I trust you. I trust you implicitly because you've gone through a process and my job is to guide you. And at times like that guidance may be, I really believe we should be doing this. But if my rep has a counter to that that's stronger and has got more of a backup to, hey, Todd, hear what you're saying, but trust me on this. I'm calling it this way. Your job as a salesperson is to kind of be able to push back as much as you're listening to kind of orders.
Wow, we went on a bit of a sidetrack there, but I enjoyed all of that advice. Thank you, Todd. One thing that when we were talking about your deal in specifically before, and this is something that like I think not only you, but pretty much every rep we've ever spoken about in a lot of these scenarios is you have to be really creative on your deal to, you know, open new doors or, you know, bring executive alignment, build champions, all of these different things. And it's something that no one really gets taught. No sales training playbook is out there or anything. And this is something that is one of your big strong points. So if we were thinking about, you know, this massive deal that you've sold to this large company, like what are the ways that you really got creative?
There was a point in the deal when I realized that I probably was more connected to the organization than what the people I was selling to were. And let me break that down, right? Is that I was speaking to very senior engineering leaders in the organization. And I remember having a conversation with one leader and I was telling him like all these things that I'd learned from other leaders. And he stopped me and he said like, Todd, have you ever realized that you may be a little bit more connected into the organization than what I am? I have the same challenges as my peers, but you know, we're siloed. We don't actually speak. So I don't know what they're going through, but you do. So I got sponsorship by the company to just set up a global meet with the organization. So I sponsored it. And basically what I knew at this point is I had to convince these leaders to join me for kind of an open day. And what we guided it under was like, basically you all work under the same company. I'm going to pay for like breakfast. We're going to get together, have coffee at this location. And we're going to talk about these challenges and really just ensure that like knowledge is flowing through your business about your pain points. And I very purposefully left out that this was sponsored by my company or anything to do with my company. It was like, I'm going to bring you guys together and that's it. So that's what we did. We brought these teams of people together, these senior leaders together. And as they were doing it, just speaking, talking, sitting down for coffee. And then everyone was talking about their pains and challenges. And this is like what I was doing in my process, right? Is identifying what the challenges were, who was getting impacted by those challenges, the cost of those, the impact. These guys started talking about themselves, of course. They had nothing else to talk about, right? Apart from these things. And then you had people in the meeting saying, so how do we solve that? And then you had like people going, well, this company, this is we should be thinking about this. We should put this on the roadmap.
Do you know what, Todd? All you're talking about, and I feel like you're just doing, oh, my mind has gone blank. CEO of Apple. Steve Jobs. It's like a Steve Jobs, Simon Sinek, where you've sort of got like everyone in the room, everyone's chatting. It's like, yeah, which also is amazing. And God knows how much credibility that probably gave you in the deal. You brought all of these people together. An external sales rep brought loads of like senior buyers at one of the biggest organizations in the world to chat about their challenges. You were probably at the end of the table with the presentation going, oh God, I wish there was someone here that could solve all of these.
But what you do in these moments is like always do the thing that your peers are not doing. So you're competing with other salespeople. And I think that you go back to pressure, you go back to what I see a lot of sales reps doing wrong is they normally do things because like our entire life is basically built to get something from what we do. That's salespeople. We get commission for doing our work. That is what we do, right? So many salespeople end up asking for things all the time and they expect things to happen. Like, right, I brought this group together. So at the end, I'm going to basically pitch slap the group and make sure they know. And my leader wouldn't give me budget unless like I get out of a signed order form. And so I used to do these things without many of my leaders knowing I was doing it. Just used to go off and do these things, expense it, and honestly not really tell many people in the company I was doing it. The reason why is because I wanted to come across incredibly non-salesy. So I always think like sales is really simple. It's you have a problem and something's got to solve it, right? That's all it is. That's all we're doing. If something is broken, it needs to be mended, right? A simple science of sales. If it's not broken, there's no motivation to mend it, which means that sometimes you sell something that's a nice to have. People just go, oh, fuck, wouldn't it be nice to have like a nice like green suit in the wardrobe? Maybe. It's not a need to have, is it? You probably need a black suit, right? And a blue suit for work. They're the two suits you probably need, right? Funerals and work. The green suit is probably because you're just nice to have it. But if you're going to go to a funeral and you don't have a black suit, I'm very sure you're going to go out and fix that pain by going to buy one. So that's a simple science of kind of sales, right? So the way I kind of wanted to look through this was if they have these problems, these people are very intelligent at solving problems, why they're in very senior positions in a very big organization, surely they're going to come to the same conclusion themselves and identify that we have one of the best products on the market. Or maybe not. And maybe we were never going to get that deal anyway because it's very competitive. But what you're getting in that moment is by not being salesy is people open up a little bit more. So you actually understand in the moment which things they're trying to solve their problems with. So competitor names will be coming out. And you have a salesperson wants to jump on it and then sell. Hey, look, this is why that product doesn't work. Let them come to that conclusion. Let them make up that decision because it's more powerful when someone gets that decision themselves versus you trying to tell them that. So that's kind of like what I suggest. And anyone that's listening to this, like I would say, when you do this for the greater good. Do this because you're trying to help someone, not because you're trying to sell your product.
Is there any way that on that specific day that you like structured it or anything like tactically you did by getting all these people together? Because I assume it wasn't just like a ramble. Yeah, everyone come for breakfast. Like you probably meticulously went like, okay, we need this to be the sort of agenda. What tips did you have or what worked and what didn't work on the day reflecting?
Yeah, the guy that told me that he had less information than me, we built an agenda together. So I had to like put a lot of stuff, like it was a while. It sounds really easy to get people together, but we built the agenda together. So he had a lot of input. He was also kind of a champion, like a really strong champion, as you can imagine. If I'm having this conversation, he's telling me these things. I went back and forth with him a number of times, location, who's going to join. At one point, I felt that no one was going to join. It's a complete waste of time and effort. It's going to fall flat. But also we designed an agenda around kind of what he wanted to do. And there were a few moments that had nothing to do with me candidly in the room. So very much like they're talking about topics that go way over your head, things you can't solve. But the whole theme was like candidly transformation, digital transformation projects. And we were kind of a huge piece of that. So yeah, like you obviously have got to get quite structured in those moments and make sure that you carve out the topic or the theme that's related to you. Otherwise it could be completely irrelevant, of course.
It's like when you're having a party and then you get scared about 6 hours before the party. You're like, fuck, why did I have this party? No one's going to come to the party. And then it gets like an hour and then you're like, oh, there's too many people at the party.
And then before you know it, the party's over and you forgot to talk to half the people you wanted to speak to.
Yeah, 100%. Did that happen?
Yeah. There's always moments you walk out and think, could have done that, should have said that, yeah. Should have done that. But I think it was more of, this had never been done by anyone in my business before. And I'd never certainly done something at this level. And I think sometimes is always remember that people probably retain like at least 10, 15% of a conversation. That's normally what people retain. So actually, I think we pay too much importance to sometimes the things that you say. People are often reflecting and thinking about the things that they're thinking about, how they're coming across. You pay importance, and this is in sales processes, to things that probably don't matter. So really what it was I did that. That meant a lot. We spoke about pains. They connected. They made new relationships together. And I kind of knew that that was tactically something that was probably bigger than all the themes involved. Because afterwards, like for months to come, when you've got two people across the globe connecting, it's Todd Jenkins that brought it all together. Who does Todd Jenkins? Oh, wow. Isn't that a great company? Didn't they do a great job? So often it's like the content that goes within. So this is where I'm quite opinionated that I think that sales is still about how you make people feel. Like sales is really about how you make people feel. There's a few tangents we're going on here, so feel free to delete this tangents. But one of the things that I remember going to my first leadership job, and I always had this thing in my mind of, I think it was the ex-CRO at Stack Overflow that told me that we want to be the best organization to do sales with. And when I'm like 21, 22 joining, I have no idea what that even means. But as I'm getting older and I have sales meetings with companies, I have like the worst AEs, the worst CS, the worst support people coming to calls, making me feel like either dumb, not wanted, not needed. They're trying to rush me out. They're trying to just like throw a bunch of discovery questions at me. And actually, I still think that we're swayed more by how people make you feel. So one of the things I've always said is like, I want sellers to make people feel really valuable and wanted in that moment. So when you speak to my sales team, I want you to feel like that's a pleasurable 30 minutes. We might not sell to you, but did you have a good experience talking to someone that cared about you? So I really think that like those things that you do, it's why I say drop the shit, drop the sales act, make people feel really good in the moment. And that's more memorable in life than just kind of trying to sell something to someone.
I'm a big believer in that. Like, it's not just people buy from people they like. It's not that. It's like people do buy a feeling of that. I look forward to that call, look forward to that conversation, look forward to speaking to them again. I've done that on tons of occasions. No, that's a good tangent. My next question is, salespeople will, I often call these, like what you did there, like a bit of a stunt. Like, salespeople will pull off these stunts where, you know, you take a shot, it lands, it works, you've now got the momentum. The really hard part is now capitalizing on that. And you've got momentum, you've got a bit of a consensus maybe, but it's very fragile. You've got a direction. And again, you can't grab at it, but you also can't drop it. It becomes very fragile, but now you've got to like shepherd it all the way. So tell us, in this instance, how did you manage to then take it from this, like, you've now created the Fabergé egg, shall we use, we're using a lot of analogies.
Yeah.
And now you've got to get it home.
So this is like, writing this email like lives with me. It like just lives with me, because I remember where I was, the feeling of writing it. I remember being at my desk, and like, this is probably 2019, I think, when we got this together. So I had commitment and I stopped selling. This sounds crazy, but we started selling a few deals, but then I stopped selling. I refused to put order forms out. I did this for 6 months. So I had regions wanting to buy the product, but I knew they were going to sign for 12 months. So I was going to be out of like a buying status. So I kept like falsing the truth, telling these people that I had access to the economic buyer and we're really close on the deal and like not to buy now, but like, let's just, so I was holding back, not even order forms, not making any money. This had all gone wrong. And by this point, I kept in conversation with the economic buyer, and him and I, like, we built up a good relationship. This deal, by the way, mapped over a number of years. This wasn't like a year, 12 months. This was a few years getting this together. But I stopped taking like any sort of orders. And basically, I had a global proposition by this point to the economic buyer. He knew we were talking to a lot of people. He started asking me subliminally for quotes and things. So what does this really map out? And all the orders I had committed, so this was committed orders that I hadn't pressed play on, they amounted to more than the global contract. It sounds fucking dumb. Just take those orders. But actually, it was year two growth, year three growth that we were interested in growing this deal, because it wasn't always year one. This was a significant deal, by the way. But individually, you could probably get a bigger deal. But no, like, that's never going to keep you ingrained. Someone else could come in and take the global. So I sent an email saying, like, hey, like, we're at this level now where the outstanding orders that I haven't pressed play on are actually worth more than this contract over here. And that got his attention. And I remember getting the email back, and he was like, you've been busy. It was like something like, you've been a busy boy, or you've been busy, or something like that. And I was like, sweating, like, yeah, exactly. And also, I've not been able to tell many of my leaders, because they probably want me to kind of like get these deals in by end of quarter to increase the ARR of the business. But it was a very tactical thing of like, sometimes you can give away too much knowledge, but to get these deals done, you've got to kind of like play that. But I remember sending the email to him, and in my head at the time is, I was trying to break it down and thinking, how can you not say yes? Like, I could trigger all these order forms and cost your business more right now just by doing so. We still had like a lot more room to go through. Like, there was a ton more conversations to go, but it certainly got his attention. So if you go back to one of my first conversations with him, where he said, I like you, like your product, like what you're doing, but you don't have my attention because no one knows you in the business. It just felt like that was accumulation of like a lot of work.
Yeah, nice. That's like the result of maniacal work. You're like, okay, challenge accepted. I will get your attention. And you pull off the stunt. Bravo. I mean, that's fucking brilliant.
Todd, you must have built so many of these. Was it like you were almost just waiting for that exact point where we're like, okay, great, like, we're just over the orders? Well, was it like a realization, being like, you know, oh shit, like, it's actually way more expensive now if they buy all of them. Like, do I just, and you email to them within the hour? Like, talk to me about how you like did that process.
It's a good question, man. And like, honestly, like, I was like, you're playing God with your own book of business at this point. Like, everything can kind of fall flat. So it was just over, we kept like doing small deals all the time, but the small deals were always kind of annoying because even in the UK, I had like two offices on different contracts. I could never submerge it, never get it together. And that was annoying because then we had to do a lot more procurement, a lot more work. And it's just like, I started to realize even in that segment that like, I'm killing myself because I'm doing deals at different, the buying cycles are all out of sync. So I knew that I had to stop and slow things down for a period of time. I just knew I had to do it. But at that point, I was like, I've got a commitment, but they think the global deal is going to happen, but there's no global deal. There's nothing. So I had to fake it, completely fake it to the people I was speaking to. And they just thought that they had to hold on. And they were asking me like, when can we go? We got it sorted out. And I was like, yeah. We're just like in procurement. We're just talking. And we wasn't at all. And it was just this realization of like, in my head, it was like a bit of a game, bit of a gamble of like, I need to make this valuable. I need to show some value somewhere. And like we had like, I think a lot of the offices that we'd signed at that early point, we had like ROI against all of it as you do, but the metrics weren't coming from like the key regions. Does that make sense? So I had to get some key regions. But at that point it was like, so I'm going to have to wait another 12 months for you to get ROI to be able to showcase that back. Because that's what happens is I think the glimmer of hope when you get to that level is, okay, USA is going to go. Let them go for 12 months to analyze the data. And at this point, like you're at that tangent where then what do? Then you get to deal with that region. Then everyone disperses again. They do their own thing again. But you've got people together. You've got that momentum. You've got to call it. But you know you're about 6, 7, 8 months away from signing a deal. You've got to call it at that point and say, right, if I go now, I'm going to kill my deal. So you just have to stop, then go. And it's really, really risky. And that deal, I did something very similar. So I left that company, joined another company. It was the first six-figure deal for this company. And I remember it was a smaller size business competitor, but still six-figure employees. And all I remember was like, it was playing the same game, but like the parameters weren't as long, meaning that like they were basically in three locations. You had to land three locations to get the deal. But it was the same game, but over a short amount of time. So I did that deal in 5 months. And it was the same tactic of like, I've got these offices that want to come on board for POCs. But if I do that, I'm out of sync. And basically, I'm going to have to wait for them to measure. But I was quite aggressive in that one, brought it all together and then made them bring procurement at the same level. So I had the demand. And I basically told my SDR one day, I was like, all you're going to do for a week is speak to that company and book as many meetings as you can with whoever you can speak to that has this job title, until like I couldn't speak to any more people. So what I'm trying to say is that like you look at these things, look what you did, you break down the process, but you have to realize how complex it is or how uncomplex it is. So you can play the same game for like a company that has like three offices in the UK. It's the same thing, but it's a lot more reduced. Does that make any sense at all? The parameters kind of stay the same.
I've got an opportunity like that at the moment where we're in with the HQ, but they've got 13 subsidiaries and we're not in with any of them. I'm having the same conversation with my BDR. I'm like, we're going to all of these individually. I want to go and go to the top again as well. And I need to keep them on a cadence, should we call it? But I also need to go across every single subsidiary and get a general consensus. But I like your point, like don't sell a deal to one of them.
Okay, cool. My question, Todd, was going to be like, now we're towards, you know, the end of the podcast. I don't know if we've already covered this, but what was your favorite moment?
Favorite moment, interesting.
And why?
I think it's the learning. This is going to sound really corny. The favorite moment was being in the deal itself, was learning, was putting my learning on overdrive. I think I mentioned to you before that, you know, I didn't come from a process of having like MedPick trained, a load of seasoned sales leaders, VPs around me. You know, we came up the ranks. I was very early into this business. But it's like the learning you're doing whilst you're in it, you're playing in it. That's the favorite moment, because like you realize that you're getting stronger. So it's like, if you've ever been to the gym and like worked out over a period of time, what do you enjoy about it? Do you enjoy going into the gym at 6 o'clock in the morning? No, you don't. You kind of enjoy what you're learning. You kind of enjoy that like middle moment, that middle process when you feel like you're getting stronger, but you're getting, you're learning the process. It's like, now I'm learning the steps. So that makes sense. It's like that moment there, it's like you have, I'm trying to think of like a tangible thing to kind of say, but it was like, I remember going in and having a conversation with the economic buyer And it was the shittiest conversation because I basically, and like, you know, you talk through these podcasts and everything sounds like it's amazing, up to the right, consistent learnings, but it's not that in real life. I remember going in quite frustrated after about a year and a half of speaking to this company, just being like, look, like I'm gonna pitch slap you. This is why you should be working with us. And it just went south. And it was just like, look, I'm just not interested. And then you're there thinking you're burning out relationships. You're like, hang on, why did I do that? What did I get out of it? Why was I so underprepared going in? You knew what you had to do. But the game, like, it's when you complete the games, you know about the games, it's hindsight. So in the moment, you don't have hindsight. You can't take yourself out. So when you hear people on podcasts, it's like, I'm the guru, all this. No, like when you're in it, it doesn't feel like that. I don't know what's going to come next. You got to think through it. So it's easy to talk about this a few years after doing it. But when you're in it, it's like you just feel yourself getting stronger. So I remember going and selling to all the investment banks. And I remember going to investment banks, like feeling that like you just had a really high level meeting with like a CTO in one of the biggest companies in the globe. This investment bank feels minuscule compared to it. Their problems are like, oh God, you've got these problems across 3 regions. Imagine having that across 15 or 50. It's like, so you just get stronger and stronger. And then your knowledge of people you speak to, and I always say to salespeople, you should be very proud of what you do. You are basically speaking to some really senior leaders. If you stay in that space for a while, you now become valuable to that person. It's like, who do you know? What do you know? We've got problems. How are they solving it? Look at all the consultancies that charge huge amounts of money just to give this information away. But you're the salesperson who's got it. So yeah, anyway, long story short, it's like in the moment, you feel yourself getting stronger, then you apply that to other deals and you can just see your win rates and success just going up to the right. It's crazy.
How what you've just described is there is like no better learning than just actually being in opportunities and testing things out and seeing if stuff works and what doesn't. That honestly is the pure reason why me and Jack, like, we created this, is because we wish there were scenarios or deals that we could hear of where maybe we were in a similar position where someone did like one of those stunts, one of those moves, like the amazing one where, you know, hopefully there's going to be a listener out there that's stuck on a large enterprise deal, listens to you talk about the story of getting all of those buyers together in a room and not making about them and go thinking, that is an amazing idea. Like, why didn't I think of that? And unfortunately, like in all of these scenarios as sales reps, like no one taught you to do that, Todd. You just had like your brainwave to do it right. And that's why we're here, because no one knows about these things. No one talks about them unless you actually know you and you're suddenly in a conversation with you talking about this deal. So, yeah.
And seek forgiveness, not permission. So if there's a sales rep out there thinking, wow, I'm never going to get the budget to do this, like just pay for it, set up yourself, expense it, like seek for forgiveness. That was a big thing, is that I think we're seeking too much validation at times. And I think like when you're in these moments, you've got to take chances. And I think that senior leaders, your leadership team will have a framework to coach you and lead you. And I think that these deals are a little bit outside the norm. So if you're doing a deal in your organization, let's say you're an organization, you sell 200 to 700K deals, and that's what your sweet spot is. You probably don't have the rigor or the framework to sell a multi-million dollar deal, because you sell multi-thousand dollar deals. Does that make sense? So like, I think there's too many sales reps out there that can probably unlock this, but the unlocking of it has got to go from just applying it, doing it, learning it, getting stuff wrong, because the playbooks of your business are not set up for it. And that's a really big lesson I don't think enough reps get taught. And that's why when I try to hire people, it's like, I'm going to hire you, but I want you to teach me something new. Like, go and do something that I wouldn't do, that I'm not telling you to do. Go take that risk. Go do something so outside the box, because it's in those moments, I think, that exceptional deals get made.
That is really, really good bit of advice, because you're right. That comes back to asking for forgiveness, not permission, is that whoever's above you doesn't have the time to think of all of these ideas. They just think about the process, because that's the way to get the most success out of the most amount of people. They can't constantly be coming up with creative ideas, and that's up to us, the sales reps, to think, what's the out-of-the-box idea here? What's the thing that my competition aren't doing? What's the thing that the customer's not expecting? What's the value add that they haven't thought of yet? That's why our business exists. And I think, yeah, those are where the landmark moments tend to come from for most salespeople. You probably get one a year, maybe.
Last question I would say is, what is your favorite sales memory?
Good question. Honestly, my favorite sales memory was hiring my first team at Codility. That was my favorite sales memory. Was I got brought in as a rep, landed basically the EMEA GM, VP, it was a director role and title. I had to hire out a whole team of people myself. The first time I'd ever kind of written a playbook, or at least thought I was writing a playbook. And then we went through an exceptional, and I mean exceptional year, where every rep was making a ton of money. Every rep was killing it. And it's like the best moment is when that you're going from being a rep and then you're going to leading people and you're seeing them win. That's amazing. Watching other people win is like so much better than watching yourself win. But you've got to have won yourself first, I think. It's like playing football. You've probably got to enjoy scoring a few goals before you go and lead a few people. So that's my favorite memory. And I've got a lot of kind of rogue memories of being a rep, which were quite fun, but probably for another podcast somewhere else.
Yeah, offline. I think we all probably have those stories.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you so much for joining us.
Cheers,
amazing.
Todd.
Really hoped you enjoyed listening to that episode with Todd Jenkins. The three key takeaways for us is how to really be patient with your big deals and make sure you can go high and wide for when you eventually get to meet back with the group economic buyer, how to think outside the box and be creative and do what your competition won't do, and last of all, how to navigate those large enterprise accounts. Thanks for listening. See you soon.